Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Conceptual Framework Measurement Roundtables, the first one of three today that we're holding in London. I'm Trish O'Malley. I'm chairing the first one. David Tweedy will be here for the next two. I should probably introduce the staff. Lili Lian and Kevin McBeth are both on the Conceptual Framework project team, project managers. Kevin is leading the measurement project, so he's going to be leading us through some of the background information. Liz Hickey is the technical director of the ISB, and Wayne Upton, the research director. And I think you've all got a list of the participants and who they're from. Anyone that's not on the list is a member of the ISB board. So if you see someone's name who isn't on the list, the board members are scattered amongst the table participants. We only have 2.5 hours this morning to discuss this topic, so we're going to try to be relatively brief with the introduction. I'm just here to direct traffic. Couple of rules of engagement. If you would like to say something, if you could put your card up, I will get you on the list and I will call upon people as I record them. And the only other thing is we are recording the session so that we need to use the mics. If you're not close, we'll probably just if you can share. And the one other thing I'd request is if you want to leave your BlackBerry or whatever on, can you just keep it away from the phone when the phone's on? Because it's one of the things that causes very weird backup onto the tape. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Kevin to give us a brief introduction, and then we'll get on with the session.
Thank you, Tricia. I want to spend a few minutes with you on the attachments to the memo that we sent you. I think it's attachments 1 through 4C. I'm sure you've had a chance to look at them, but I just wanted to give you a few comments and insights into the staff's thinking about these. If you would look with me at attachment 1 first, where we have the project divided into the three parts or milestones that we've identified, and we have listed the issues that the staff has identified for the boards to consider. We decided to divide this phase of the conceptual framework project into these milestones because, unlike some of the other phases, there is a lot of background work to do on this phase. There was so little done in original frameworks and a lot to do in this one. Also, we know that we have some difficult issues to address, and we didn't want to address all of the difficult things at once. We're currently in milestone 1. The staff has worked on this, and the other attachments you see are a result of what the staff has done so far. The boards have not approved or disapproved of anything that you see. After the roundtables have concluded, the staff will be taking this material and reworking it and taking it to the boards as soon as possible. In the second milestone, we're going to address some of the really difficult issues by trying to evaluate each of the measurement bases that we have come up with in the first milestone. We intend to use the qualitative characteristics that we have currently worked out in the conceptual framework and that are in the preliminary views document that I'm sure you've all seen. These will be the primary evaluative criteria for the measurement bases, but we will be considering some other things. For instance, we'll be revisiting the question of an appropriate capital maintenance concept. We will be looking at basic measurement concepts from a scientific point of view, as that is where measurement expertise is found. We may look at other criteria if they come up as we're working and we get some good ideas. The third milestone is where we'll try to start drawing some conclusions from the work done in the first two milestones. And here we'll find some of the most important questions of the phase, such as, should we conceptually be choosing one measurement basis for our financial statements, or should we be using more than one? If so, under what circumstances should various bases be used? Although this is a conceptual project, we've decided to address some practical questions in the third milestone to make some kind of bridge for the boards and the constituencies between what we come up with on a conceptual plane and the problems that you already encounter in practice. In attachment two, you can see the result of the staff's work to date on identifying measurement bases. One thing that we thought we had to do after an initial attempt here is come up with some different language. We found that there was too much confusion in the language used in discussion, not only in board meetings between board and staff, but also in the literature we've read, in meetings that we've attended of various constituencies. We have found that different terms are used to describe the same measurement basis, and the same term is sometimes used to describe different measurement bases. And this really creates a difficult problem when we're trying to argue points and come up with conceptual conclusions. I think it's important to note that what we are not trying to do with this material is come up with new language to substitute for language that's currently in the standards. I don't know how far this will go, but for now, the purpose of this is to help the boards speak clearly with the staff and with each other during this phase of the project. You'll notice that we have tried in the last column to identify all of the current terms for measurement bases and associate them with the terminology that we have come up with. And you can see this phenomenon of multiple terms for same measurement basis and vice versa. In the third attachment, we have taken the measurement basis terms from attachment two and tried to indicate two important properties. One, is this measurement basis basically a price or a value or perhaps neither? And two, what is the basic time orientation of this basis, past, present, or future? We chose these because they seemed obvious and evident to us as we did some background reading and as we thought back on the economic fundamentals that underlie what we're trying to do. We're not sure that we have all of these right. This, again, may be subject to revision, but we think that this exercise will help us as we go forth in the second milestone and try to evaluate the bases. The fourth and fifth attachments are attempts to take sample financial statements, both IFRS and US GAAP, and see where we are today in terms of the measurement bases that we've identified in the second attachment. Again, a disclaimer that we don't pretend to assert that these are entirely correct or that we haven't left something out. We have had some disagreements among staff and consulting board members on some of the finer points, But in the end, the purpose of these attachments is not to come up with something like this, but simply to see where we are. And the last attachment, the one that we sent you by email in color, and I don't know if you printed it in color. I have mine. I made sure that mine came up in brilliant color. The purpose of this was simply to have something that was easier to look at in one page. It's not exactly the same sample balance sheet found in attachment four. It is a sample IFRS statement from another source. But it does show, I think, the situation that we are in today. As the staff looked this over, there were at least three things that we could conclude from this. One is that some of the measurement bases that have been widely advocated over the years don't appear in here anywhere in current practice. A second thing we noted is that the usual debate we hear about historical cost versus current value, or perhaps today historical cost versus fair value, is really a very much oversimplified description of what's going on, that we're in a much more complex situation than that. And thirdly, although I'm sure especially those of you that have been in practice for some time have been accustomed to what is being done now, at least from a conceptual viewpoint, and we are in the conceptual framework project, not a standard setting project, this simply isn't an acceptable situation. We need to come up with something better in the concepts project. And with that, I'll turn the time back to Tricia.
Thanks, Kevin. That's the roadmap of kind of how the boards are approaching this project. And it, most unusually, what you got was not, as we usually have for roundtables, a fully developed document for comment, but here's kind of the project plan. We're interested in hearing your thoughts on how we can take this project forward in a way that's going to really help us fill in that enormous gaping hole in our frameworks, which is the measurement chunk. And I think as the cover note indicated, the biggest problem we've got now in standard setting in terms of trying to, at the standards level, in picking a measurement basis is that the framework gives us no help whatsoever. It kind of has a kind of sort of a random list of things you might think about and absolutely no guidance whatsoever on the criteria you might use to choose one or another in various circumstances. So that's the critical piece of this project that we're hoping to develop. So with that, we're interested in your thoughts, and that's all we've got to say. I knew I could count on you, Ken, to start things off. Go ahead.
I wasn't particularly intending to jump in right at the start, despite the fact that it seems to be a slight habit. But what I was going to say in relation to the first question is I think you've got too many things there. That I think that what you need to be doing is looking at families of measurement bases. I haven't come up with the families, but there might be something that's sort of an original entry price, a cost you paid, or a replacement entry price, or an exit price, or a value in use. There's various things that you could describe as families. But within those things, that you then want to say, and the real driving force in this is what do the users want the information for in respect of any particular item in the accounts? And I can see that the users may want different characteristics about those items, and you may pick up some of those different characteristics through disclosures. But the essential starting point in terms of producing a balance sheet is, well, what's the most important characteristic for that item? Let's try and get that in. And that's where I was going to go to sort of families, that I think you want to say, well, if the most important characteristic is the user for some reason wants to know what I paid for this, what do I mean what I paid for it? Do I mean with or without transaction costs or whatever? And I think that's a second degree question. And I think you need to find your basic things. But it struck me just listening to you talk, and this is the reason I jumped in, I suppose to a certain extent I challenge the order you're doing this in. And this hadn't struck me until I sat and listened. And I look at the milestone three, and I've I've got stuff in there about what will people use it for. And I think that what struck me is it's a bit like at the moment you've said, well, I'm going to do some tasks. There's some task I need to do. I'm going to do a bit DIY. So what I've done is I've thought of every possible tool I've got. I've thought of screwdrivers, spanners, hammers, and I've laid them all out. You know, and I'm going to see what's the advantage of hitting this screw with this hammer and things like that. Whereas what you ought to be doing is sort of starting the other end. Yes, you need your basic tools, and this is where I'd say families. You need a box of screwdrivers, you need a box of spanners. But don't get them all out and line them up, because you don't know what size you're going to use. Establish your boxes. But then you've got to look at the job you're going to do. And that, to my mind, is the users. Look at what the users want in terms of information for different items in the balance sheet. And I'll come back to the theme that I think they'll want different measurement bases for different items. But decide what it is you want. In the same way as you do it yourself. You don't knock your screws in with a hammer. You don't screw in your nails. Decide what basic things you're going to do. And only then come back and start saying, is this a straight-head screwdriver, is it a cross-head screwdriver, and the more detailed stuff. Now, to be fair, I think it's got to be an iterative process. I don't think you can just say, okay, users, what do you want? But I've no idea what the different bases are. I've no idea what the different sorts of tools are. I think you've got to iterate it a bit, but I think you want to be thinking, I suppose what I'm saying is, if you put together what I would say is these families of items, you want to be thinking in terms of the user, what information might the user want? They might want to know what I paid. They might want to know what I could sell it for. They might want to know what I think I'm going to get back for it if I just use it. Those are things they might want. From that, establish your families. And within those families, you'll have subdivisions which you've got nicely listed. Then start working on the families and decide what the characteristics of the families are, which is sort of what you're doing with milestone one. But then keep coming back to that end point. Keep iterating with the end point of what is it that people want any particular characteristic for an item, how they want that characteristic described, and which are the most important characteristics for different items in the balance sheet.
Thank you, Jerome.
I was not planning to start, but I just want to respond to that because that was one of the first things that I thought about when I read your paper. I thought it's very important to distinguish between what are families and mere techniques, and to add some things to what Ken has just said. I was struck when I read your paper about the fact that there was like 10 description of what historical cost was and only 2 for fair values. And I reflected on that, and I kind of thought, well, isn't it just because they are, in this paper, there is description of techniques of evaluating historical cost, and no description of techniques for evaluating fair values. And if you wanted to have techniques for evaluating fair values, you could have maybe 5 or 6 or 10 things. So the first point, and I do agree that it's an iterative process, would be to identify those techniques that have similar characteristics and that would correspond to different users' needs. This being said, I have to say first, because Ken started very quickly, the first thing I had planned to say was that I do thank the board for starting this roundtable right now. Measurement is a very important issue, and it's very important that we start now at the beginning of the conceptual framework looking at those issues and trying to proceed together. So very much thank you for having those roundtables.
Thanks, Jerome. Bridget?
I'm sort of carrying on the same vein as Ken was. One of the things that I noted, and I think it's probably one of the most important things, is that the project seems to be the wrong way round, but hopefully you're thinking about bringing in all the different layers at the same time rather than trying to go through one by one. Because as a user, it's very difficult to work out which measurement we want until you work out what it is we're using it for. And along those lines, I think it's quite useful to think about measurements in the same context as we're thinking about presentation of financial statements in that project that's going there, because what's coming out there is that the focus of users is on the income statement, and that's what's happening. And we actually think there are different parts of the income statement we'd look at. So one is the operating revenues, then you'd look at financing and you'd look at investment. And as analysts, that's actually the way we look at things. And I think you'd find it helpful to think about maybe measuring those things differently or putting things into those boxes. Because in effect, we're looking at, as credit analysts, we're looking at financing. We want to know how much they have to pay back in the end. That's one way, and that's the way that we would always measure that. With investment, that's a sunk cost, but obviously it's a cost you're going to have to replace at some time. That's a different way of looking at that. But in order to work out whether you can make your investments and pay back your financing, that's when you start looking at operating cash flow, and that's when you need some different type of measurement. So there are different measurement concepts coming out from that, which I think would link in very well to the presentation of financial statements. I'm sure that's something you're thinking about, but I'd like to keep that vein going if we can.
Thank you. Russell?
My first remark was how taken I was with the rainbow appearance of the balance sheet, and I can imagine this would make most balance sheets much more attractive to the readers, actually. On measurement, on the milestone two, I mean, I think one of the things that perhaps ought to be thought about is to consider what information is conveyed by each of the characteristics, which I think is quite a difficult question. And it might involve understanding rather more clearly risks and rewards and cash flows of assets and liabilities in particular cases. And I guess one of the risks is that that might get deferred into milestone three, whereas I think maybe it needs to be thought about in milestone two a bit. My other comment is that when I looked at the IFRS financial statements, from a banker's perspective, they obviously don't include all of the line items that we would appear seeing in our balance sheet. And I think from our perspective, one of the most difficult areas, obviously, is financial instruments, where there is certainly these three measurement bases right now. And I guess some of the hardest issues are going to be around some of those instruments and their valuations.
Thanks, Russell. I can't believe that nobody else has anything to say. Richard, go ahead. Gerard, you're next.
I'd echo Jerome's kind of comments about thank you for setting up the roundtables, because I think they are very helpful. I mean, it was somewhat interesting, and it may have just been language, and apologies if it was, but this was described as, although it's a conceptual project, we will be addressing practicality. And I think this comes exactly to Ken's point. Surely that is the wrong way around. Sure, the whole thing is we should be addressing practicalities of what's going on, not just conceptual ideas. And I think it's something of a problem in the way the thinking is going on, that actually we should be addressed, you know, with standard setting as a whole and including the conceptual framework. The conceptual framework is designed to help us out when we have practical problems, is it not? And therefore, surely we should be looking at the practicalities to actually drive what's actually happening in the conceptual framework.
Of course, it's hard to consider the practicalities until you figured out what the concept is. Gerard.
Okay. In the same context, I would say that as a preparer, we review the balance sheet of the different banks, which are our competitors, and we have been surprised this year to see that BNP Paribas has the highest balance sheet in terms of volumes. And second point, which is the most important, half of the balance sheet is at historical cost, and half of the balance sheet is on a mark-to-market model. So in fact, for us, working on conceptual issues on measurement is very important, as we would like to know where we are going now, from the point where we are. And the question is our balance sheet not understandable, or is it understandable using two types of measurement, historical cost and mark to market? So thank you for organizing such a meeting, because it is very important for preparers, and especially when they are bankers. So how for us, the question of in discussing this series about measurement It is important to look at the method that evolved in the financial statement presentation. And these methods should result in the following characteristic. We think that the method should be relevant, should be reliable, should be understandable, and should generate a fair presentation of our activity. And we think that there are two debates, one with relevance, which concern for who is it relevant, management or users? And second being, can relevance justify different measurement method applied to different activities? And we think that in the methodology used by ISB, we should start by these two questions and answer these questions.
Thank you. Simon?
Thank you. I'd like to start by reinforcing a point which I think has been made by several people who've already spoken, which to link the question of measurement to the objectives of financial statements. And we had commented on the, our members have commented on the discussion paper on the objectives and qualitative characteristics, and several of our members commented that stewardship should be an explicit objective in financial statements. If we are to conclude that one of the main purposes of financial statements is measuring management performance, then which measurements bases are adopted is affected by what the role of management is considered to be in terms of the scope of the role, but also the specific objectives that management have. Is it to maximize the fair values of the company's assets, or is it to maximize the future cash flows? So it's very difficult to come to conclusions on measurement without linking back to the objectives.
Thank you, Simon. Richard.
Yes, thank you. I think support for the idea of looking, well, you know, we would very much support the idea of looking at how people are using the different numbers in the accounts to determine the appropriate measurement basis. And I think in terms of the sort of rainbow, the rainbow picture that we've been that we've been given, I think the some of that isn't as much of a problem, I think, as it might as it might appear to be, because I think that people are tending to use the individual lines of the balance sheet and the individual items in the balance sheet. They are not, on the whole, making an enormous amount of use of the bottom line. And if you've got a collection of apples and pears, I agree the bottom line of net assets may not mean all that much without thinking about the individual components. But I think most users of the accounts, I think we will find, are looking at the individual components where the where different measurement bases for different items might make more sense. I think the other question, the other point that I think Kevin made was about the language, and I think that's very very welcome development that you look closely at the language, because I think that has been a source of immense confusion. So I think your tighter definitions, I think are not only I think helpful for your board deliberations, but I think could also be could well be helpful in the standards in the standards themselves to start to move to more to a more exact basis. I do, however, take Ken Wilde's point about families of measurement bases, and that I think the current list that you've got is neither necessarily a complete list of current measurement bases under IFRS, for example. And in some cases, it does seem more detailed than in others, and we are getting into techniques. And I'll just raise the question of depreciation. You've put that in as one basis, but in fact, of course, all sorts of other measurement bases are then depreciated value in use, for example, maybe a depreciation base. So just to link depreciation to historic cost probably isn't quite right. But I do think that if you when you do home in on these, I think the more exact definition basis will be very helpful.
Ken.
We do seem to have got some common themes and common things being said around the table, which I find encouraging. And a lot of it is consistent with what I said at the start. I just wanted to pick up something that Richard Ackland said when he said, I'd made the point about practicality. I'd certainly accept practicality as a very significant characteristic. It's something you've got to build in. But the point I was making also was a conceptual point, not just a practical point. And I think it's the same thing that I'm hearing from Simon and Gerard and Richard, I think that you want to be looking at why somebody wants the information, and I was struck by what Bridget said. If I went for a very, very simple entity that we all decide to get together and invest in a company because I've got these great ideas of making money out of buying and selling something that's of value, and the gain is going to come from the value increase, there may be two things I do. I may buy some office furniture so I can actually operate an office, and I then start buying the very investments that you're hoping I'm going to make money out of. As a group of investors, if I look at the investments, the thing you're probably most interested in, of the two characteristics, what did it cost me, what can I sell it for, is the what can I sell it for. You want to know the what did it cost me, and you'll see the difference on that coming through the income statement. But essentially, because I'm there to buy stuff and sell it at an increase, you want to know what can I sell it for. As far as the office furniture is concerned, again, two characteristics. What did I pay for it? What could I sell it? Well, if everything goes wrong, what could I sell it for might be of interest to you. But during the period of time when we think that the entity is going to operate profitably, you're probably more interested in what I paid for it, either in terms of stewardship, which Simon said, or in terms of perhaps replacement cost. When it wears out, what will I have to spend on some new furniture? And that leads in again back into the families. You know, what did it cost me? What did it cost me? What's the depreciated cost and things like that? So there's questions in there. But I think you want to be starting those basic conceptual points of the various characteristics of an item, which one are most important for this particular item in the balance sheet, which will be different for different items.
Keith?
I just want to speak perhaps on the basis of a preparer in a very asset-intensive industry which we operate in. To me, what would be not a nice outcome of this if that there would be a case for two separate sets of financial statements, one perhaps for the external user community and the other one that's used internally by management to manage their businesses. I think we certainly made every effort to hold management accountable with the same set of measurements and disclosures as we would then externally. I think that's a good thing to keep, and I would hate to see a digression of that there in potential. So I guess at the end of the day, our management perform the stewardship debate should really come to the fore, and I imagine that if the, I guess, somewhat appealing and romantic notion of one measurement basis is followed, I guess there would be a digression, and certainly the preparers would have to use a different basis also for the internal stewardship accounts.
Mary, you had a question? Comment?
I just had a comment that maybe we can get some input on. As Ken said, there's some common themes that I'm hearing, but I hear two different things that would be helpful for us to understand. A challenge for the board often is trying to reconcile seemingly conflicting objectives or perspectives. And one line of comment I'm hearing around the table from Ken and Bridget and others is that we should think about different measurements for different types of assets or liabilities, depending on either their nature or their use. And I understand that point of view, but then I hear Gerard and others who are not at the table telling us that performance measures such as profit or loss, aggregate measures, Gerard's concerned about, does the balance sheet mean anything with different measures? Same goes for the income statement. The question is how we should balance the desire to have different measures for different particular line items in the financial statements with the meaningfulness of aggregate measures, such as profit or loss, such as the balance sheet in total, because I think that's a place where we have trouble trying to figure out whether we need one measurement objective for the entire financial statements or not, and that's part of the issue.
Sharon?
Reflecting on that, I was looking at your attachment one, and when I said that my organization was grateful for you to organize this roundtable because we have to start early. At the same time, we are hoping that the roadmap that is in attachment one will be flexible. And this my comment, my answer is Mary's comment. If I looked at your milestone things here on M07, it says that the measurement of assets and liabilities will be assessed according to their capacity to create faithful representation of assets and liabilities. And this seems to be the driving force of what you are going to assess the measurement criteria according to. Well, I'm not sure about that, because if looking at your conceptual framework things, you know, it seems to jump into the definition of assets and liabilities without clear regard of what users want. And there might be other things that might come up, and not to be having a global picture. What is a balance sheet? What is a balance sheet supposed to portray? Does it supposed to give something which is close to the market value of a company? Or is it supposed to give another picture? If so, which one? I think those questions have to be clearly answered before moving forwards to defining what kind of measurements can have to be in the framework or outside the framework.
Thanks, Ken.
I think the one sort of obvious potential point of weakness of what I was saying about different measurement bases is exactly this. You know, what do the balance sheet totals mean? And as far as I'm concerned, and I'd say the same thing about the income statement totals, as far as I'm concerned, the balance sheet total, whatever level I measure that at, means something very, very important. It means it's been added up correctly and it balances. And it means absolutely nothing else. You know, that number, if you create it, as I would wish, from different measurement bases, because I think the different measurement bases are relevant for different items, you know, beyond, I have seen balance sheets that don't balance, funnily enough, beyond actually proving the check that that's been done, I think you've got to look at the underlying categories of items. And indeed, I think with some items, there'll be two measures that are very important, and you'll have to look at the notes to get the other one. So I don't think you should see the totals meaning anything. Now, that's a bit cynical, because I think you can do some very, very rough, and I understand analysts have to react very quickly at times, and therefore they like some single numbers, so they can look at those single numbers as the things hit their screen instantly. And I think those single numbers have enormous limitations, but are used, and therefore I think that as long as they understand the limitations, I'm not going to object, why should I, to them using them in that way. But they should be seen as aggregations of different things, apples and pears added together. They shouldn't be seen as particularly meaningful. I think that's one of the problems you're having so much difficulty with the income statement, because it's trying to use different measurement bases, and you're looking how you put those things together.
Bridget?
I agree on the single number, that single numbers have limitations. Whether all users understand that and understand what the limitations are, I'm not so sure. Which I think if you're putting together a conceptual framework, we can actually help users to understand those limitations by maybe pointing out that you need to look at different parts of the income statement. I think that's going to help, which I think is where we're getting to in the presentation of financial statements in the end. Picking up on Mary's point about we have got a difference in what we're saying. I think part of the reason we've got that difference is because of the different entities we're looking at, the people who are looking at getting the total balance sheet to mean something, I think I'm mainly speaking from banks, and banks are analysed differently. I think one of the reasons they're analysed differently is effectively the whole balance sheet is operating assets and operating liabilities, the way that works in practice. So I don't have an answer, but that might be one thing to throw into the pot.
Thank you. Philippe?
I wanted to return to the previous item of discussion, and that was in relation to Ken's point. Maybe over time, the characteristics of the information may change, or the user's needs may change over time. For instance, if you are at the startup point of a company, you were taking the example of an investment company that we might together create, what we may be interested at this startup phase is the cost of what we're going to invest. And later on, over time, we will be interested in the value of what we've got. And the closer we get to the liquidation, to the end of that company, the more we are interested in the exit price. So maybe there's also a time dimension which should be taken into account in our exercise. And I wanted to put this for discussion, because we seem to look at the different measurement basis as a static thing. And I think there is a life in the company, there is a life in everything, and maybe over time, over this life, there may be some changes in the desirable attributes of the measurement.
Thanks. Andrew?
I think I would start by saying that I think that, as a number of people have also said, I would support having a smaller number of overall groups of valuation. I think that the papers that we have at the moment are perhaps a little too detailed. I think I would also, in the initial stages, be looking much more closely at exactly what the user needs are, maybe in each industry, maybe in each type of company. What do they need to make investment decisions? What do they need to run a company? What do they need to analyze it? And that might be most clearly, if you look simply at industry sector, in some industries, you're sitting and wanting the value of your assets and liabilities to change. That's what you make your money from. You're a broker, you turn things over quickly. On the other hand, you might be manufacturing, you're making things. So actually, the day-to-day change in value of your assets and liabilities isn't that important. It might be that there would be some opportunity cost involved in numbers. For example, if you have a property that's become very valuable, your users of the accounts might like to know that, but that's not of primary importance. They want to know what you're making out of what you've spent. One or two people have also mentioned reliability. I think this is something which is quite critical. I get a lot of feedback from people that I speak to on, if we do more fair value, then where's the reliability? And by reliability, I'm really looking at, is something dependable? Does it give the same result each time you use it? And there's a little bit of doubt as to whether that would actually work. So I think that it does come back to looking at what people actually need, looking at each different industry, looking at the mix that's in there, because I don't think that you need to have everything the same in the balance sheet, and seeing what measurement is best in the context of that industry and for those users.
Thank you. Patrice?
Thank you, Patricia. Okay, I've just noted that papers you've sent was not required reading. Unfortunately, it was a bit late for me, and I tried to read all these papers. Was really a terrible exercise for me because very difficult. I don't want to be in your seat because it's a complex matter. Let me first thank you for all this meeting, and I hope that you will pick up some good ideas to go on. Just two or three big impressions. Number one is, even if all these meetings are really interesting for you, I want to be sure that on the top of that, we are to be sure that a global agreement or a global understanding has been set on what are the characteristics of financial reporting? For who? What's the signification of the financial reporting? I'm not sure that the debate between preparers, users, measurement of the financial performance, or considering the company as just an investment, you can sell it off or buy. Or is behind all these companies, there is a long-term policy, a strategy, depending on a lot of things. And if we cannot reach a sort of global agreement, I'm not sure that we will get a lot of difficulties to answer all your questions. It's a first point. Second point, you know, we are speaking a lot of time of users. I'm looking for all these users. I intend to have a big meeting in France in 2007 to try to gather all these users and to get their opinion. But it's not very easy to find them, sure. And there are some analysts, some investors. Can we consider today that it's a 500 billion euros portfolio held by a bank, and the head of this company could be considered as a user? Okay, it's very difficult. But please, if we cannot get sufficient solid ground of what we want this financial reporting meaning for the future, we will get a lot of difficulties in technically defining all these characteristics. The second is when I have read the questions, some concept inside the questions are questionable. I've read somewhere that you use a faithful representation mm-hmm. for qualifying a measurement. Assets and liabilities. I'm not sure that faithful representation has been accepted so far. Do we accept this faithful representation meaning, or do we go back to a reliability meaning? I don't know. That means, just my conclusion, if obviously all this sort of meeting is really interesting for us and especially for you, we have to be sure that we are not doing something a bit too anticipated before the basic have been just set up. Thank you.
Russell?
Thanks, Trish. I wanted to answer one question that Mary Barth asked about, are we troubled by different attributes being used through the balance sheet? And the answer is I don't think we particularly are. And I think one reason is that I don't think you can look at a balance sheet in isolation, because in many ways a balance sheet tells you some capacity to earn money in the future. And depending on what your business is, then different measurement bases may have different relevance to particular line items. So as a very basic example, if the way you earn profit is by trading an item, then a current value of what you're going to get if you sell it is perhaps relevant. If you're going to earn your profit, earn your future cash flow by holding onto that item for 10 years and earning a regular cash flow from interest, then given that you might be exposed to the amount of money you've actually lent to someone, then many would say the current value isn't relevant, and actually a measure of historical cost both tells you how much risk you have and gives you the base from which you're going to earn cash flow and profit in the future. So I'm not particularly troubled by having certainly a couple of measurement bases around the balance sheet, and I think one of the previous speakers said that people tend to disaggregate and look at individual line items, and I agree with that.
Richard?
I would agree with Andrea and some of the other speakers around the fact that I think different organisations and different industries, you do need different measurement in place. And it's interesting because that's actually, to a large extent, how financial reporting has evolved anyway over time. And I don't think you can kind of completely disregard the practicalities in the markets of where we are today, because undoubtedly that is a demand-supply kind of dynamic that has arisen over many years. I mean, it's quite interesting in terms of the conceptual framework side of things, because actually the way most corporates actually manage and run their businesses is based on transactions. In fact, a lot of the analysts are actually kind of looking at businesses for how they deal with transactions, and yet the conceptual framework is also based on assets and liabilities in terms of the definition, the background. And so one of the things I was just going to point out, if it's truly conceptual, surely we should be looking more at the transactional base, which is actually mimicking what is happening in the real world. And if that's not the case, I think my only kind of plea would be is very happy with the conceptual framework, very happy with what you're trying to do, but just bear in mind that the way businesses are run, managed, and looked at are slightly different to the way that you're actually developing the conceptual framework. And that may very well lead to dysfunctional solutions, and therefore any seemingly clear solutions that come out of the conceptual framework, I think, need to be very much stress tested and say, does this make sense for the underlying markets which they're actually meant to serve?
Thank you, Ken.
I think Russell and myself are saying similar things, so not surprisingly, I very strongly agree with him, but there's one thing he just said that I very strongly disagree with, but I think it's semantic, but I think it's a very important semantic which bedevils a lot of this debate. Because he referred to an item, a loan that you're going to have for 10 years and you're going to take interest, and he said its exit value, its current value, may not be relevant. It's clearly relevant. And I think that's the trouble. All these characteristics for any item are clearly of some relevance. What happens is it's of much less relevance. So I think this bedevils the whole debate. Every single item in the balance sheet has every one of these characteristics. And you can make a good case why that might be a useful piece of information to give under certain circumstances. What you've got to decide is, for the reporting you're doing, for the user base, which are the most relevant? And where I can see he's immediately going to respond, but where I'd be agreeing, I think that it'll be much, much less relevant. I wouldn't say it's no relevance. So I think you've got to get away from the fact that you can demonstrate relevance to these items and say, well, which is the most relevant for each item?
Richard.
Just returning to Mary's question about different measurement bases and the can you sustain those when you're looking at a balance sheet and a profit and loss account? I suspect different measurement bases are inevitable, and I think particularly with the income statement, you then do have a chance to try to articulate that with the balance sheet and to try to segregate out different sorts of, and I think you ought to be trying to segregate out different sorts of gains and losses in the income statement, reflecting the inevitable different measurement bases that you're going to get in the balance sheet.
Wayne, a comment? Question?
Yeah, more of a question. It's not our role to comment, but there have been a couple of remarks about stewardship, and they seem somehow related to business model, which has been inherent in several other comments. And I wonder if y'all could help me with a difficulty, and let me put it in an example. We all enter into the business that Ken was talking about, and our business is to build and operate shopping centers and apartment blocks. In the States, we'd call this a real estate investment trust. And over time, the relevant measurement attribute for all of that real estate that we've purchased has pretty widely come to be accepted to be fair value. We could argue about the details, but I think certainly in the real estate investment trusts and in many other real estate development companies, it's fair value. Now, let's take a different business model, allegedly. We set a bond to operate a retail, chain of retail businesses, maybe grocery stores. And in the course of that, we accumulate one of the biggest real estate portfolios in our jurisdiction. Now, if we're looking at management performance, why is the real estate portfolio and the real estate investment trust, why is it important to have fair value as the measurement attribute for that to evaluate management performance? And not to have fair value as the measurement attribute in the chain of retail stores. Because arguably, both accumulations of real property seem to have the same characteristics. So how is it that we decide for an asset like that when fair value is the most useful measurement attribute and when something else might be? I think that may be the heart of some of our difficulties around a mixed measurement app model.
Russell.
I just wanted to respond to Ken's comment on what I'd said. I mean, I think I agree with what he said. And it goes back to one of the earlier comments I made, is I think that you need to address what information you're trying to get out of some of these measurement attributes. Because I don't believe, and I never have believed, that a balance sheet, a single number, conveys all the information that either management or a user of your accounts agrees. So I think it depends what it is you're trying to convey. And I think you need to understand that, the concept of risk and earnings and cash flow, when you're trying to address this balance between what goes in a balance sheet, what goes in notes, and what risk information is going to be disclosed, because I think that's, in a practical world, that's what all this comes down to.
Thanks, Tatsumi. You have a question?
Maybe my question is a little bit similar to what Wayne said, is, and also that my question maybe to Ken as well, is I think that financial instrument objectives and some information should say there is an information gap between the preparers and also investors. And what investors would like to receive from the financial statements is the most important part. And in order to provide some information, we are discussing about measurement, what measurement attribute is most meet the investors' say needs. But investors' needs is very difficult to find out. And Wayne said it's a business model. But in my terms, I think the management intent affect the measurement attribute or not. Say, Ken said the, say, long-term investment like a bond and expected interest. In that case, fair value changes has no relevance to the measurement of that investment. That means the nature of the investment, or in other words, the management intent to hold that investment might determine the measurement measurement attribute. That is what you have in mind? Or say, my question is, management intent is reflecting, must be reflected to the how he managed the corporate and the information as a result, the information as part of financial statement should be provided. That means the management intent decides everything. Do you think that is the right understanding, or I'm wrong to understand?
You want to respond to that, since you're
Yes, certainly. I would never dare use the words management intent in the presence of a board member, because I know I would destroy my case right from the start. Actually, in response to what Wayne said, nobody ever said life was going to be easy. So, you know, this is not going to be an easy exercise. And where do I suppose I would want the board to come out on this? Well, starting prejudice, and at the start of things, it tends to be prejudice, because, you know, I've got my thoughts and I believe there's logic to them, but I'm open-minded, as I'm sure the board is. But my starting prejudice is, I think that users will want different characteristics emphasised for different items. So should the board say, well, these items you have at fair value, these items you have at some sort of entry, these are you have at some sort of replacement cost, whatever? No, because I don't think the board could ever be definitive as that, and I don't think there is a single business model. And I take up what Philippe says, the business model will vary with time. So there will be items, and Andrew referred to, you know, there may be a significant opportunity to a property. So if I take something like Wayne's real estate business, if my business model is that I'm buying property with a view to making a gain and then selling it, I think the users are going to be interested in how far up that gain am I? Have I bought a good property? Have I bought a bad property? Did I speculate well? And therefore, they are quite likely to primarily be interested in exit value for those sorts of businesses. If it's a retail business, I've seen retail businesses where they really operate two businesses. They operate selling stuff over counters, and they make a lot of money from real estate. They're the users. I think the users are bright enough and sophisticated enough to understand that's a different business. If I take a business that is a particular prestige store, and perhaps that's our only store, I can't remember whether Al-Fayed owns more than just Harrods, but, you know, he takes something like Harrods. It's not likely to be turned into a block of flats. It is never likely to have the position where turning it into condominiums is going to be a good use of it. So it's just an ability to do retail. So I suspect a different emphasis will be put on that item. So what would I want the board to do? I'd want the board to identify these families of items. I'd want the board to go on further and look at the underlying characteristics within these families. So if I'm talking about a historical entry value, does that mean with and without transaction costs? Under what circumstances would you put transaction costs in? Under what circumstances would you not put transaction costs in? What circumstances would you look at that in depreciated terms, one not depreciated terms? And then equip us with an understanding of those things and leave the preparers and the users to put the right information in. And I don't mean that's a complete free-for-all, because I expect the board to put constraints around it and say, under these circumstances, these are the things that will be expected to look for. But if you take a retail property, you know, I can imagine the board giving some sort of general indication that under the circumstances where you are an investment property company, you will put that in at value. Under the circumstances where you are purely an operating company that purely is interested in that as an operating asset, you'll put it in possibly at something else, replacement cost, original cost. But under some circumstances where there is a genuine locked-in profit, where there may be a decision to be taken, do we stay in that building, do we move to some other building, I would either expect that information to be captured in the notes, because as I say, there may be more than one piece of information that's relevant, or under certain circumstances elevated to the balance sheet, because it's become more important. And I would be seeking for the board to produce the guidelines and the requirements that limit those choices to the right sensible choices. What I wouldn't want is the board to, my starting prejudice, I don't think I'd ever want the board to say, that's it, we have just decided the measurement characteristic for absolutely everything in the balance sheet, and this is what you do with differences.